Righty. That's the woman, Sam Bailey, David Coleman, who won X Factor.
Oh, right.
And she's a prison officer.
Yes.
And she won the whole thing, and that's her song, Skyscraper. So the point of the song is that the man destroys her and levels her to the ground, right, because he's just a bullo. And then she arises again, floor for floor, story for story, right, reaching for the skies because she's a skyscraper. And she is, you go, girl, she is right up there. She's 155 feet. You're getting upset now. I know
I'm
that.
Moved. I'm
I
moved. Know by, it's actually your telling. It's the way
it's
you're telling
the way because
it. It's a pity it is radio. All of that building, here. Floor
on
by
the floor, floor. And my hands are going higher and higher like a skyscraper.
They need a webcam in here for you.
I'm ready. Do you know if they did that? I'd be a dead man walking because the stuff that happens during this show. Okay, do you like my Beatles cups? How cool are they?
Oh, wow, they
yeah,
are.
Yeah, they
cool.
are. They're a little.
I heard you tinkling off them earlier. And,
can I hear them again?
I did wonder. Yeah.
It's like a xylophone, a Beatle phone. I just got thanks, Elaine, for sending in me that the photograph of myself and Andrew Scott, who plays Moriarty in Sherlock, from The Green Room on Friday night, just sent that in. So we'll put that up on Facebook page, and that's a bit of fun. Did you watch Sherlock?
I did by default, yeah, because my... Yeah, I wasn't really into it. My kids wanted to watch it, so...
What amazing kids you have.
They know true quality, obviously.
They do.
But so I ended up watching it. I just, it's a bit too smart for its own good.
That's why I like it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I see so much of myself in it. 51552, answer the door. Yeah, loads of times I do that. I say I'm gone for a walk. They see the car, but I get away with it, says Anne. This is people knocking on the door.
I quite like people just turning
up. You like surprise calls?
Yeah.
Social ambush?
Yeah. Yeah. There are times when it's a little bit inappropriate and you know, we've been whatever, but, you know.
You've been what?
Busy.
Doing what?
Stuff.
Having the other?
Doing whatever.
Steady. Do you get a knock on the door when you're...
Occasionally.
What do you do?
You get up and answer the door, don't you?
But I'm sure. You're in flagrante, right?
Well, normally it's time to put on clothes. I mean, it's obvious at that stage that, you know, whoever's called the door is mortified because it's taken so long to get to the door.
Why don't you not just ignore it and make them go away and get down to keep going with what you're doing?
Well, obviously not.
My husband away and I had three kids all week. On the Friday afternoon, two kids on play dates, and I just sat down with a cup of tea when a friend and her three kids arrived, and I wanted to cry. When they left the place, was a mess, and I was grumpy.
Yeah.
See,
Well, I'm thinking you're right. I'm thinking about us. Other people's children sometimes can just be a little bit too much.
Just a bit too much. Okay, let's get down to some business here, David Coleman. My two-year-old girl has a terrible habit of pulling her hair out, which is distressing for me to see. She only seems to do it in her cot before she goes to sleep and when she's tired. Her hair is so bad now, you can see a bald patch appearing. I tried to stop her and tell her it's wrong, but she's too young to understand. She's a very content child, though, and is no way frustrated or anxious. I have said it to her GP, who said it's behaviour. How can I get her to break the habit?
That kind of a habit, where it's not anxiety related, but it is to do with soothing and comfort, your best bet is probably to try and give her something else tactile to use to keep her fingers busy, because it's a bit like a child who's used to having a parent there, you know, stroking their head, for example, and just couldn't possibly fall asleep if you didn't stroke their head.
You're right.
Eventually, of course, they can learn to fall asleep without having their head stroked. And similarly, what this little girl needs is something to occupy her fingers that will give her the same sense of just soothing through the, presumably it's through the repetitive nature of either twirling the hair around her fingers or pulling at it or whatever it is she's doing. So that's about finding something else that might do it. And I'm thinking, you know, you don't want long strands of anything like bits of wool or something in the cot, just in case in the middle of the night that all got wrapped around her or wound around her or anything. But something perhaps that she enjoys touching that might just offer a substitution. And that's the best way to do it. Because other than that, you're going to have to literally police it by sitting beside her. And every time she puts her hand up to her head, you have to take her hand down. But it's going to take her hours and hours and hours to fall asleep. And so it's just one of those soothing habits that she has. And it's about trying to find some other blanket type thing or a soft toy or something that she can have to hug and to hold
to replace,
to snuggle up to replace
okay.
The hair.
And this is a very sad one. Please help me with my 5-year-old boy being bullied in school. Is there something I can teach my son to do or say that will help him stand up for himself? They're hitting him and they're kicking him and slapping him, and the school are ignoring the matter.
Okay. I would just go in and I would make so much fuss in that school that it cannot be ignored. Absolutely. Because there's a limit to what 5-year-olds can achieve. But if they feel like there's a gang of other kids who are willing to hit,
violent,
kick and slap. Yeah,
like, you know yourself. You, do you know what you'd do? I don't, you'd be like Charles Bronson. Like,
as a parent, I know, absolutely. You'd want to go in and yeah, you'd be knocking kids left, right and centre if you had the opportunity to.
Principals and hate teachers.
But it is amazing that the school is ignoring that. And so I'd just keep going in and I would make so much noise. I'd be writing letters to the chairperson of the board of management if you feel like you're getting nothing from the principal of the school, and making a big fuss and a big noise about the treatment that your child is getting. And then I'd move my child, because I'm not sure that that's necessarily going to change a lot if there's been no support at all from the teachers or the principal. Then your child is basically being thrown to the lions every single day. Yeah. And so you really need to address that. I would certainly consider moving my child to a different school if there's one in the area.
Yeah.
But in the interim, I'd go in and I'd make as big a fuss as possible to make sure that those kids are stopped, that somebody's just, you know, all it takes is for the adults around to be vigilant and to stop and to intervene.
Yeah, so. Yep, fair point. Dorothy's been on. We are a family at our wits' end. A 9-year-old with cerebral palsy. She is very mobile, mainstream school, all good, very bright. Since she was a baby, she's had terrible issues with fears. She will not step out of our sight for a moment. My partner has to sleep on a mattress on the landing so she can see one of us at night. It's got to the dangerous stage as she has nearly fallen down the stairs. We don't function properly as a family because of all of this. Anything we can do?
That, to my mind now, that's probably worth going and getting some help with, because that sounds like it's quite a large kind of dynamic problem in the family. That's not just necessarily about one child and their anxieties, because those anxieties in some ways are being replicated by the mum and the dad, in as much as the mum and the dad are willing to sleep out on the floor on the landing in order to try to, so they themselves have anxieties about her, I wonder.
One anxiety's feeding another, is that it?
Possibly, yeah, possibly. Yeah. I mean, certainly, you know, it'll definitely help their daughter if she feels she can learn some skills to manage her anxieties. And if she's bright and doing okay in school, she'd probably easily have the capacity to do that. But definitely, I'd say they need professional help, as opposed to even anything I might suggest just as a short-term thing here. Because, again, there's something going on for that family that they're all... And it could be just because she has that disability that maybe they're more anxious than they might otherwise be about her. Maybe they just worry about her more because they know she's faced struggles and difficulties all along the way. But that needs to change for them, that they need to feel, I suppose, a little bit more confident about her and her ability to deal with this, so that will actually give her also hopefully a bit of confidence that she can deal with some of these anxieties herself, rather than everybody feeling like, oh my God, none of us can cope, none of us can deal with this.
David, our 15-year-old daughter spends most of her time on Snapchat. And there's a conversation that's been had in houses around the country every day of the week. It's very hard to control and keep the peace. Any ideas on how to come to an appropriate arrangement? I suppose for Snapchat, you can read just on the phone.
Yeah, on the phone and just living on the phone.
Yes.
Can you have it without the fights? I'm not sure you can actually have it without the fights. I think that's it. Ultimately, as a parent, you have to take a stand and you have to make a decision about what you think is right and wrong. And then you have to actually go and sit down, really talk and negotiate that with your child, or teenager in this case. And ultimately, they're going to have a different point of view. And so there's quite likely to be a bit of disagreement and conflict. In an ideal world, we'll be able to manage that nicely and calmly and deal with the whole thing. But in reality, it'll probably end up getting quite heated. But ultimately what you want to do is to try to come to some agreement that everybody is willing to stick to. And that's about you stating your case, saying, look, you know, I think 2 hours at night is enough time for you to have your phone for, because you've got other things. Age 15, probably doing her junior cert this year, so she's got other things to do as well in terms of study and in terms of other ways of socially interacting, even actually meeting people or doing extracurricular activities, sports and so on. And so that's what you're really trying to negotiate with her. But I think as a parent, you just kind of sometimes put your foot down and say, look, I'm just not happy. There will be phone-free times. Like we had the unfortunate incident of the internet collapsing yesterday.
Armageddon.
And actually, we were all somewhat traumatised. I had two articles I was trying to file for my newspaper, which was problematic.
So you're as bad as the
kids. So I was a bit stressed about it. But I couldn't believe that just by the time dinner came around at 6 o'clock, the faces were like just thunder around the table. Everyone was like, I didn't get to do this. I couldn't do that. Did you fix it? When's the internet? Are you getting on to the man?
But isn't that a desperate indictment of our time? That
how quickly
how
it becomes.
Quickly, yeah. How dependent we've become. Almost like on electricity. Yeah. You know, the electricity's gone. If the internet's gone, it's kind of
and
like
I
that.
Like to think that I'm you know, pretty on top of things in terms of like we've been so careful with TV and stuff for our kids, and yet the internet has just snuck in the back door and we have all become entirely dependent on it.
Well, we were talking about last week about phone-free zones. Like I was saying, the couch should be one. Like if you want to make a phone call now, if you want to mess on your phone when you're all watching TV and trying to have a shared experience, to use that kind of gobbledygook expression, but that's what it is essentially, I think it should nearly be treated like having a cigarette. And you need to go off and have a smoke out there. Go off and text your friend. You know, just tapping away. It's antisocial. It's like literally having somebody else on the couch and having a chat with them.
Yeah.
I mean, if you visualize that. So it's out there for phone stuff.
Yeah.
Snapchat, the whole lot. You can do them all in one go if you want, because I know this takes 5-15
hours. But sure, isn't there a thing in The Independent about kids as young as 10 sexting?
That's in the paper this morning.
I would be willing to bet that a high proportion of that's happening on Snapchat.
And you believe that?
Well,
how do they know?
I presume they go out and ask people.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean, I don't know what 11-year-old or 10-year-old is actually going to go, oh, yeah, I send naked pictures of myself.
Jeez, I hope they don't.
They are. That's what sexting's all about. Yeah.
Oh, that's sickening, actually. We might talk about that another time during the week. We'll see how serious a problem that is. David, my 9-year-old is arguing all the time. It's exhausting. I try and distract her, but I lose my temper. I end up screaming at her. Is it boredom?
From the parent doesn't sound bored at all. No, sounds really stressed.
It's the child. Do you know sometimes, I know what they're talking about at 9, what can I do now? I said, and that's for you. And then actually the answer to that is you come up with 10 things they can do and then they're floored.
Yeah.
You can draw, you can paint, you can eat. But I don't want to do any of that.
Yeah, but that's pure rationality as well. Like kids hate when you're really rational.
They hate it.
Certainly as a first port of call. I think the first thing, and I know I keep saying that it sounds like a broken record at times, the first thing you have to do is see it from their perspective, acknowledge their frustration and boredom and the fact that they're really unhappy about something, and then come in with the good rational ideas about all the different activities that they could possibly do. With a 9-year-old, it's unlikely that she's bored per se, but it certainly might be to do with the dynamic that is built up again between the mum and this daughter, and so that for whatever reason, maybe the daughter feels like this is the best or the easiest or the most common way she can just interact with her mum. It's like if we don't row, then we don't connect. And so for her, in some ways, building things up to the crescendo of getting the mum really frustrated and the mum responding, that's real interaction perhaps for this 9-year-old, not in a conscious sense, but unconsciously that might be how she's actually creating things. So again, good for the mum to begin the process of changing that, because she's the adult, and so it's a bit easier usually for the adults to be the first ones to make a change. And one of the things that mum could do absolutely is think about her own stress and her own frustration and how does she manage that, because if she can stay calmer for longer, those problems won't develop as quickly or to quite the crescendo that they currently do. So definitely a good one for the mum to try and manage her own stress and her own frustration, her own anger, that she doesn't get cross so quickly. And then secondly, the more she can try and see things from her daughter's perspective, I think it will really help as well. Because at the moment, what will probably happen a lot of the time is that the mum will come up with some really good ideas, sensible, rational ideas, as many parents do, and the daughter will entirely reject them. And that's when the real argument begins. That the daughter saying, you know, that's no good, or, you know, I can't do that. And the mum saying, well, why not? What's wrong with them? Why don't you do? And again, all the rationality. But I think when we empathize first and empathize a lot, it just takes a lot of the wind out of those sails and really reduces the intensity of the frustration that our kids are feeling. And then they're more willing to come and actually, you know, negotiate a solution, look at how we can solve the problem. Whereas if we just try and solve the problem first, they don't want to hear about it.
On the bullying thing, my son was bullied for over a year in school. We were up and down to the school and nothing changed. So we took both our children out of that school. And it was such a difficult choice. But within 6 weeks in the new school, we had our child back. And he was happy and content. And it took moving them to make the difference. We drive 60 kilometres every day back and forth twice. But it's worth every bit of stress, and that's exactly tallying with what you were saying.
If you're not getting any kind of support from the teachers or the principal, you absolutely have to consider moving, because, you know, a five-year-old cannot fully stand up for themselves. I mean, sure, five-year-olds can be assertive, but actually, if there's a group of kids there at that age, you really need adults to be stepping in going, this kind of behaviour is not okay. You are not allowed push, you're not allowed kick, you're not allowed whatever. I mean, there's schools where they don't even allow kids to run around, you know, so how they can have schools where, you know, they're quite happy to leave them punching and kicking each other.
Bonkers.
Seems odd.
I'll take one more. My 2.5-year-old's little personality has changed in the last couple of months. She used to greet people in a lovely manner, and now when she sees someone coming to the house, she cries a little, says go away, and won't acknowledge them at all. And this is with everyone, sometimes her dad and her two sisters, but not with me. Is this just a phase? She's the youngest, her sisters are 9 and 12, and she gets plenty of attention, but certainly not spoilt. And we do the naughty step, etc.
It sounds like she needs someone to ring ahead. It's just, she's probably surprised.
It's joking. A phone call. She said the kid's just shocked.
Just can't stand. I just hate people calling unannounced.
Yeah. That's what it is. What do you think?
I've no idea why she has changed to becoming that little bit upset as opposed to being excited by visitors calling. It may be to do with, just any kind of change, because if you think of, for 2.5-year-olds, one of the things that they're trying to do is to individuate, so that become their own separate being. And in order to achieve that, they have to kind of pull away from their parent. But then, you know, they like to know that their parent is still there. So it may be that they just feel their parent's time is getting taken up.
Yeah.
So when their mom is you know, busy with somebody else, maybe that causes just that little bit of stress now for the 2.5-year-old. I would imagine it's just a phase. It will pass. It's not something I think that'll be a long-term problem. But it's just, again, you know, just make sure that, you know, rather than saying, oh, stop your crying, say, oh, you know, you seem a bit upset. Come and sit on my lap and encourage your daughter to come and just spend a bit of time with you and with the other person, and then soon enough they'll probably ease into the other person's company and it'll all pass over.
David, thanks so much indeed for that.
Pleasure.
As always, we can read your next article in the Irish Independent.
Well, there's one in today, every Monday
of the week, friends.
Actually, what I was writing last night was next Monday's.
Okay.
But it's gone in, thankfully.
See, because the internet
found it eventually.
Having broken it in Killaloo, it's fixed again. David Coleman, as always, thank you very much.